Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the gyps in the BC. It is Saturday, the third day of Anno Domini 2026. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm ready. You've been sitting here for half an hour.
I remember my microphone there, yeah.
Yeah.
And 5 minutes after the hour, for your edification and delectation, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. 2025 was an incredibly frustrating year for Windows users. It feels like that's an understatement.
Yeah, really.
It feels like nobody at Microsoft is focusing on it, leading to lousy quality testing, bad updates, missed deadlines, and ignored security issues. Support for Windows 10 ended in October, and you would have thought that 2025 was the perfect time to strengthen Windows 11. Instead, Microsoft spent most of their time shoving half-baked AI into every conceivable nook and cranny they could find, which seems to have done nothing more than add more bugs to their monthly updates. It seems like right now more people hate Windows than at any time since Windows 8 days. Yes, even more than Windows ME. Sorry, I should have warned you. It starts, but by no means ends, with AI. Microsoft seems to want to hand over everything about Windows to AI, both for the user and for their programmers. Unfortunately, this seems to be more important to them than the user's experience or the stability of Windows itself. Even Notepad has a co-pilot button. Notepad.
Well, since they discontinued WordPad, we have to use Notepad.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Which was better. WordPad was a better product.
Mm-hmm.
Back in November but people using WordPad didn't buy Office.
Yep.
Right.
So they had to discontinue it. Back in November when Windows President Pavan Davuluri mentioned that Windows would be evolving into an agentic OS, the backlash was so massive and so vehemently against the idea that he had to disable replies and issue a follow-up statement reassuring customers that Windows would continue to innovate outside of AI too. This frankly unhealthy obsession with agentic AI has pervaded every corner of the Windows experience. Sounds great on paper until you read the fine print and discover that it comes with serious security implications and warnings. While we'd like to think that anything with this bad a security rating would be killed in the lab before it ever saw the light of day, Microsoft is cheerfully flinging it out into the world. Security, it seems, is increasingly unimportant to Microsoft. On the non-AI front, you should have been playing the Uncle Dave music in the background of this. On the non-AI front, for those of us who support Windows, the control feature rollout means it's possible that two Windows PCs, even if they're updated at exactly the same time and have exactly the same hardware, might have different features enabled. It's a nightmare. And these rolling updates seem to be causing more problems and requiring more fixes than ever. And all this is called the vultures, from Microsoft's point of view, to begin circling. Google is working on an Android PC. Apple has begun reminding us how seamless their ecosystem is. And Linux has already doubled the number of desktops it's running on out there. And there's no sign of that ending anytime soon. Microsoft has recently had a panic meeting about this very topic that they even pulled Bill Gates into. Poor guy. And they're right to panic. If Microsoft doesn't do something and fast, they may well be starting on the long slide into irrelevancy. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how frustrated are you with Windows? And your choices are, I'm on my last nerve, I'm not happy, but I'm coping, meh, I love Windows, and Windows. So far, we have 28 votes, and Windows is 12 of them, followed very closely by I'm not happy, but I'm coping. So if you want to vote in the poll, it's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, if you'd like to talk about this or dang near anything else on the planet, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 800-790-0255. 800-516-0415.
Now, see, I wish we had some, you know, I'd play the Uncle Dave thing, but what we really need is like the, what do they call it, noise machines and that, or sound effects of to like breeze and that type of stuff to calm people down, because 10 to 1 odds home, most listeners that are listening to that part are throwing stuff and get just about ready to boil over, so you try to give them something to drink.
Remember, intentional damage is not covered under your accidental damage warranties.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
If it's a feature, they don't have to fix it.
Yeah.
They label most of it features.
Well, Linux, was it Mint? I really don't remember which one, said that they're going to add AI into Linux. People went
flipped
ballistic. They just went ballistic. And so they had to come out and say, no, you don't understand. We're going to make it available to you. If you want to make it happen,
part of your,
there's a switch.
Okay.
If you don't want it, don't flip the switch.
That's fair.
This is Linux. You get to make choices, even if they're stupid. And I gotta give them props for that. Absolutely right. You have the right to shoot yourself in the foot, and Linux will load the gun for you.
Yep.
You know, that's perfectly correct from the Linux point of view. You get to do what you want. And so, yes, if you want AI in your systems, you can have it, but they're not forcing it on you. They're not making it mandatory. They're not even, they're making it, you actually have to go into the menus and turn it on.
Okay, so there's some effort on your part that you've got to do it so that you can, you know, have it if you want it, which, you know, let's face it, there are some folks out there, maybe other developers that want to add or, you know, do other programming or other features that they would like to have. So, yeah, it's just freedom, and that's one thing about Linux.
It's great to give you ideas on how to start, but don't assume what it tells you is true.
Well, yeah, right, and AI has its place, and it is a good place, and it is an important place, but it isn't everywhere, and it isn't for everybody.
And you can't trust everything that comes out of it.
Right.
You've got to really step back and reevaluate a lot of the stuff that comes out there, because, you know, it's gathering all this information, which could be misinformation, and you're forming these opinions.
When you use Gemini now, there's a little tiny thing at the bottom of the screen that I forget the exact wording, but it basically says, sometimes Gemini lies. Check your sources.
Yeah. But to sit and believe everything as fact.
Well, I read some AI person was talking about that, and it says, just like real people, we don't want to admit we don't know.
Right.
So we'll make something up. And now you're happy.
Right.
If I say I don't know, you'd be mad.
What
sort of
doesn't
like somebody
seem to
else
work,
we know.
Yeah. Right. Well, what doesn't seem to work is I have added to my prompts now, if you don't know the answer, just say so. And that does not seem to work.
It finds an answer that's wrong.
It would rather find an answer that's wrong than say I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I don't, like I said, I use AI. It has its place.
Yeah, for searching and that type of stuff. Or
but I want to use it. It's like buying a lawnmower and it follows you around.
Mm.
Okay, it's a tool.
Yep.
I use it for certain things. When I'm not using you, get in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it everywhere. And yet Microsoft insists that it, you know, well, you know, it's not your computer, it's their computer.
Yeah, they own it. You just rent it.
You just get to use it.
Yearly
you're the product.
Yeah.
And I get that. Which is one of the reasons I don't use I don't use Windows. And
we all want the intelligent AIs we see in all the good science fiction movies.
Right.
We don't want the evil ones we see in the bad.
Right. Well, right.
So for every robot that turns evil, some engineer put a red light bulb in there just in case.
Just in case. And then wrote not only the code, but the circuitry to activate it. I get it.
Yeah.
For me, I want robots to do things in the real world. I want a robot that washes my car. I want a robot that does the dishes. I'll do my own writing. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
You go wash the car.
And they're starting to come. It's 25 grand at the moment.
Well, yeah.
Although, in the very tiny, tiny print at the bottom, most of the features are teleoperated, not autonomous.
So we're paying somebody in some third world country pennies a day to wash my car.
Well, it isn't so different than sometimes what happens here anyway.
Well, yes, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I don't need, if you're going to write angry letters, write them to Dave. He doesn't care.
You
know? I don't care. AI has its place, and it is very useful in the right circumstances. Those circumstances aren't everywhere, and I don't need my lawnmower following me around trying to mow everything.
Mm-hmm.
I want it in the garage until I take it out to use it where I want to use it.
A lot of those robot lawnmowers now have plow attachments, so they can plow your driveway.
Now, that works for me.
Yeah, there's one out that they've been advertising that is just a snow blower. And it'll go out there, and map it out to the pattern of your driveway, and you just hit a button, garage door opens, and that thing goes out and goes up and down and blows.
My daughter tried to talk me into paying for her to put a heated driveway in her house. I said, why would I pay? Why would I pay for that?
So when you come there, you don't have to worry about you falling.
That's pretty much her reasoning right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Yarbo snowblower, $25,000,
mm-hmm.
which is about what a real high-end snowblower costs.
Right, yeah. right. But, yeah, so...
Well, it's like just this past summer, we had this woman come in, and this huge box. I mean, this thing had to be 4x4 and at least 2 foot tall. Boom, slams it down. I go, anything wrong with it? She goes, I'm going to string him up. He thought he could order this without me finding out. And it was like close to $4,000, this mower that you do by remote control.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool.
Which is a little bit robotic. Of an autonomous, maybe.
Right.
And she goes, he could get his lazy out there and push and do the mower.
Well, this Yarbrough's got some interesting products. They have the main like engine, and then you can attach a lawnmower attachment, a snowblower attachment, a leaf blower attachment. An edging attachment.
But for $25,000,
you don't sit and ride on it yourself.
Better serve me lunch.
Well, for $25,000, how many years is that of paying somebody to plow your driveway?
Yeah, really.
I'm sorry, but it's a lot. It's mm-hmm. a lot of years. So
unless you got one heck of a long driveway,
and if go on YouTube and you find videos of these things wandering off into the sunset, going across people's lawns, mowing their roses down.
Somebody comes by and it messes up the signal.
That's why the RC one is better than the autonomous one, I think.
Right. Because you can always cut the engine with the
kill switch.
Yeah. So AI, look, we're going to be seeing more and more and more AI. And a lot of what we're seeing is not actually AI. It's just clever programming. We say, my house is all AI now. No, it isn't. You've got a device that notices when you come into the room. It's a sonic device or an optic device, and it then turns on a light. That's not AI.
No, it's just a sensor.
That's just a sensor.
It started out being called home automation.
Right.
And then, what's automating it? Well, it's software. Well, that's an AI.
Yeah,
that's a new buzzword.
And none of it is AI.
Yeah, get that old PowerPoint that we're replace all the Bitcoins with AI.
Yeah, exactly. Get out your deck and search and replace. But people have been doing that for forever. Now they're putting it in televisions. AI in televisions. What in heaven's name is that? I don't want to know.
Oh, speaking of television,
that free TV you can get. 55-inch TV for free. It has a second screen underneath that shows ads. And the AI in the TV makes sure you're sitting there watching it, and you get a free 55-inch TV. I'd rather pay the $200.
Speaking of TVs, did you see the new one out? You know, there was the QLED.
Oh, yeah.
Now they call it the mini LED.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Much smaller LEDs.
Yeah.
Holy moly, the colors and on then, that.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Below
they're
that is the micro LEDs.
Yeah.
But they're too expensive still.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of the Apple iPads have the mini LED. So each dot is three LEDs, red, green, blue.
Right.
And because it's so sharp, the image is just gorgeous on the iPad Pro line.
Right.
One reason it's $1,000.
Yeah. Well, it's just one reason $1,000. And
this year, by Christmas time, who knows?
Yep.
Right. Right. And also, you know, how many of us can actually
see that many
see
colors?
That well?
That's part of it. You can only see it when it's sitting next to an iPad that doesn't have it.
Right. Yeah,
that's how they do it.
So that's why we
have
our demos. Now look at this one. Look how much better that screen looks.
Well, that's what they were doing on the ad that I saw. They were showing the QLED and then comparing it to the mini LED. It's like, oh, yeah.
Right, right.
You're comparing apples to oranges.
If you just walk in a room and look at it, you might think, good color.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. Now you're done.
Yeah.
But, no, I get it. It's
I still like those QLEDs.
The problem is you're not spending enough money. you're not buying things often enough. And when you do, B, you're not buying the very high-end stuff. And they don't like that.
Yeah, true. And I won't.
Right. There's always conspiracy theories. There's a conspiracy theory that a large part of what made Microsoft do Windows 11 the way they did with the TPM and all that other stuff is because hardware companies went to them and said, we're not selling PCs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are either keeping the old stuff or they're buying iPads or any, you know, tablets, and they're using their phones and their watches.
Well,
what the hell?
The new computers that are coming out, they're not much bigger than that tissue. Matter of fact, mm-hmm. half that size of the tissue box, and they're just as powerful as your desktop. Granted, you can't put all these other graphic cards and all that other stuff
in
it.
Yeah, people are used to that giant tower, and 99% of the people don't need that giant tower.
And it also, again, it depends on what you're going to do with it,
mm-hmm.
right? If what you're doing is playing high-end games, then yes, you need all the cooling and you need the $5,000 graphics card and all the other yada yada. But if what you're doing is surfing the web, you can do that on a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a $5,000 computer to do that. And you know, people. Everybody seems to want to buy laptops, but most people don't need a laptop. You pay a premium for that form factor that most people do not need.
Well, that's why we're all waiting for foldable phone prices to come down to a reasonable level. So if because everyone carries your phone with you anyway, if you can unfold it to a bigger screen, and now Samsung has a tri-fold that unfolds to an even bigger screen, but that's $5,000.
I'm waiting for the science fiction thing where I can take this little rod out of my pocket and pull out a screen.
Andromeda had that.
That's what I want.
And the crazy thing was, it was also a hand weapon.
Oh, right.
So you could use the energy that displayed the screen to fire energy pulses.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. First caller of 2026. How are you?
Hey, good. And I'm actually not in Greece right now. I'm in Red Hook, New York, and with my in-laws.
I'm sorry. Congratulations.
actually, they're wonderful, wonderful people. So, I was gonna tell you.
Blink twice if you need rescuing.
Sorry. I'm in the bedroom all by myself, so I can lie if I want to.
Yeah.
I'm not held hostage, thank God. But anyways, what I was going to tell you is... I've got a Hisense TV.
Oh, yeah.
That is mini LED and also has an AI processor in it. And they use the AI to control the backlighting to really get the zones. You know, they put, I don't know, the TV has 700 and something zones in it for dimming. And they use the AI to get it to dim as much as possible in the darkest places and without getting that halo effect on everything.
Right.
So that's what they're using the AI for in my TV, is to process that backlighting.
Yeah, again, we used to call that a sensor.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but if they want to call it AI and charge you more, I guess that's how that works.
Yeah, this is what they explain to you what it is, but you know, it is. It's a sensor, in a sense. No pun intended. The mini LEDs get so close to OLED, if you got enough zones, it blacks are black. And if you have them side to side, the black may be a shade lighter on the mini LED than it is in the OLED. It's nothing to worry about to spend that much money on an OLED.
Yep. No, I agree with you. And
yeah.
Again, I will guarantee you there are some people out there who look at it and can tell the difference instantly. They are few and far between.
Of course.
For most of us, there's no point.
I have a brother who has an LG, and my TV happened to die when he was here, and I had it warrantied out, and I ended up getting that TV for $800 because it was the end of the 2023 season for TVs.
Dear.
They were getting rid of them. And when I brought it home and I got it all set up and the picture set, he went, "Oh, my God, I would have bought this TV instead of the OLED. And it would have saved myself $600.
Yep.
$700. You know? So, you know, and that's coming from an OLED user. So.
Yeah. And the reality is just because it says OLED doesn't mean it's good OLED.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he's got an LG, so he's got pretty much the best they make out there.
Right.
And the Hisense also uses what quantum dots, but they call it ULED. They have their own version of quantum dots, and the color is just spectacular.
Nice.
Spectacular. So I can't complain at mini LED. They're great. So and now I'm just waiting for the new RGB ones to come out, which will be $15,000, $20,000.
Yeah.
For a 50-inch TV.
Yeah, I know. Well, and then the other thing is most of what we watch isn't designed for those TVs.
Yeah. Well, so
what's the point?
So I use YouTube TV.
Watch an old TV show.
Yeah,
and you'll see the difference.
I use YouTube TV as my TV source, broadcast TV source.
That's what I have.
They want
That's
more money for the 4K version.
Right.
No. So I have a 4K TV.
Right.
And I would switch back and forth between like YouTube has some free 4K content. And then I'd switch to the same thing in the non-4K content, and I could maybe tell the difference.
Right.
But when I went from 60 hertz to 120 hertz, you definitely see that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely that.
Yeah.
All right, excellent, Mark. Thank you. Mark? Is Mark gone?
Did we lose him?
Evidently.
I guess he's gone. Thanks, Mark. Yeah, and that's just another example. They call it AI, and it really is just a sensor. We've had those for decades to control the backlighting. You dim the room. I've got that on my radio, on my bedside radio. I turn out the light, and the light on the radio dims. Nobody calls it AI. I suppose they should. Then they would charge me an extra $100 for that radio, which would more than double the price. Way more than double the price. So, yeah, I get it. I don't see it. Most of what we're calling AI isn't. And, of course, you know, AI is full of slop anyway. So that'll come up in more of the news as we go along. It's all about AI these days. There's really no other choice out there but AI these days. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go too far because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free, 800-790-0415. We'll be back with Soundbites in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Dan from Webster on the line. Sorry, Dan, what's up?
Well, I've got a few things for you. First of all, a technical observation.
Huh?
I can hear your conversation during the break.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah, you can.
On the phone system, yeah.
Yeah, on the phone system. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but not over the air.
Right, just as long as you are aware.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, yeah, no, I am.
We didn't say anything bad about you, did we, Dan?
No, just...
Darn!
I thought we were talking never about mind. Dan. Okay, never mind.
We did the dump
thank
button
you.
On that
thank
one.
You. What's up? What else?
Okay, I've got two questions for you. First of all, if I was to use, let's say, Revo on installer and to remove AI from my computer... Are there any negatives?
Well, generally you can't. Revo on installer removes a single program.
Yeah.
Or multiple programs one at a time. So it would have to be a program, an AI program you installed that it would be able to uninstall.
It cannot remove Copilot, for example.
What's built into the OS.
Right.
Okay, I thought I had gotten rid of it.
Mm-mm.
You can turn off Copilot, but it's still in there. Wait,
well, you can hide it.
Right, and then the next one, Microsoft update, will turn it back on.
Turns it back on, but even when it's hidden, it's doing stuff in the background.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Yep.
And secondly, and the most important, is it possible to reverse entropy?
Yes, but you have to be a 3-year-old.
No, that was the answer to the last question.
What?
It was Isaac Asimov, isn't it?
Yeah,
the last question.
And yes.
Let there be light.
Yeah. we're on the downside of the entropy curve, my friend.
Okay.
Yep.
3-year-olds are on the upside. They get energy.
Yeah.
I have a theory, by the way. Children gain that energy by sucking it out of the nearest adult.
Oh, without question.
But for the
not
rest
always
of us...
Their parent.
Right. Well, for the rest of us, we cannot reverse entropy yet.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Dan. Have a great rest of your year.
Okay.
Well, like he's not going to listen or call in again. Have a great rest of your day. Have Pete's sake. No, entropy. Entropy, the motto I live by is entropy always wins.
Yep.
You know, there's no way around that. Entropy always wins. So, Revo One Installer can remove a lot of things, but it can't remove internal parts of the operating system, which is what...
It's baked into the code.
Right, it's baked into the code. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Well, good evening, first of all. Good afternoon and Happy New Year.
And the same to you. What's up?
Have a question. If you want to start a podcast and use video too, and your equipment at the moment won't record tracks individually, from what I can see now, it looks like YouTube is the way to go if you use video. Just wanted your opinion on that, or does YouTube fall short of other things like Spotify?
Well, YouTube is good for long format video. They're pushing for shorts, also like TikTok and Instagram. To be honest, all three you should post to. We post to Twitch because that was a gaming video platform, and Facebook, which is kind of the biggest platform too. But the concept has sort of been split between live streaming, where you watch now. On demand, where you watch that same thing later, and then a podcast, which is downloaded to your device to listen offline.
And those are usually audio.
Yeah.
But if you're adding, you can do the video element. So you really have, what I see a lot of podcasts do now is they have a the full thing with video on YouTube, for example, and then the podcast, the audio version, is available separately to download through your favorite podcasting software.
So I'm thoroughly confused.
Yeah. So you can do you record it all at once, right? The idea generally is that, as Steve said, if you're using YouTube, it is both live and recorded. And so it can be played again later. Podcasts are almost always just recorded. So you do the live thing on YouTube, then you extract the audio and make it a podcast.
But YouTube now does video podcasting too. There's quite a blur between a traditional podcast and recording your live stream and downloading it later. It's almost the same thing these days. Traditionally, a podcast was an audio file that you would download and play on your iPod. In fact, in the early days, Lee LaPorte was saying he tried to call it netcasts.
Right.
Because people were confused that you had to have an iPod to play a podcast. No, you don't. Any audio format will work.
But the other thing is, of course, most of the YouTube podcasters I've seen are just people sitting around a table anyway. There's not really that much to see.
Yeah. The real trick is if you want multiple people that are not physically together.
Right.
So like right now I've got three cameras running and I'm streaming a one shot of all three people. If we had an intern, then we could do full screen camera shots and rotate among who's talking. And there are ways to do that remotely. StreamYard that we use when we're remote is one. Restream is another one. There's a bunch of them that each person on their own device, wherever they physically happen to be, does their own recording, and then that's all fed into a single stream that comes out at the other end, either a live stream or then someone edits all together. Because you asked about each channel, to be able to edit each person's channel, and then you go into like Final Cut or Premiere, and build a show with transitions between each person.
And just to confuse you even more,
okay,
you could get everybody on Zoom,
yep,
and then either do a screen recording,
mm-hmm,
or pipe it through OBS,
right. Now, programs websites like StreamYard and Restream have streaming built into them, so it can stream it live, as does OBS, the open source broadcast system, which is a mixer. So I'm mixing my three cameras together with text overlays and whatnot, and then that one stream is being fed into YouTube and Facebook and Twitch.
So let me interject and ask then, is your show considered a podcast?
We have a podcast. So, yes.
Yeah, we have a live.
Short answer is yes.
Short answer, yeah. We have a live video stream. We have a YouTube podcast of the live video stream. And then we have an audio podcast that would go into a podcast player, like iTunes or
any one of the others. That are available.
Now, Spotify is more of a distribution network.
Right.
And they've been criticized for buying up popular podcast companies and then pricing everyone out. I think they paid $1 billion for Joe Rogan, which is ridiculous. But he's got the numbers to do that. Before that, it was Howard Stern.
Right.
So traditionally, it was satellite radio paying too much for traditional radio station celebrities. Okay. Once you gain enough celebrity, you can start dictating your fees.
Uh-huh.
But now with basically any computer, even a cell phone, you could load the YouTube app and go live streaming on your phone anytime you want.
Right. For yourself. If you're talking about multiple people, then you do need something like Zoom or StreamYard or OBS or one of those, particularly if people are in multiple different locations.
Right. Well, I think it's clear. I need to go back and do some more homework. I called because it was getting confusing anyway.
There's a lot of blur in the overlap. So, like, for your church, you have a live stream of your services.
Right.
You save that and then upload it to YouTube and Facebook.
Right.
You can create a podcast file, which is a special XML format. In fact, let me find some links on how to create a podcast that mm-hmm. then people can download automatically, and it shows up on their computer, and they can watch it later. It's very similar to an on-demand video where you just click play and it plays now.
Okay. Well, I think I'll go bury my head in the snow for a few
minutes. Yeah, I think that might help. But it's an admirable thing to do, and what part of the problem is analysis paralysis. There are so many options, it's hard to pick one.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, you pick one, and if it doesn't work for you and you don't like it, you can pick another one.
Okay.
There's no law that says, oh, you started with OBS, you must always use OBS.
It's not cemented in concrete.
Right.
Oh. And so probably the easiest way is the Facebook app or the YouTube app and hit go live.
Right. But again, and that depends on whether or not it's you alone or you and multiple people in the same room. Or you and multiple people in different places.
It won't be me. I make wires work, and beyond that.
Yeah, right. But it depends on whether they're all sitting in one room,
right?
Or they're in disparate places. If they're in disparate places, then it's a little bit harder. That leads you to StreamYard or OBS or one of those.
Or each person records their own end.
Well, they don't record it.
They can. They record their own end, and then the editor takes those six recordings and
builds them together.
But they're real-time, but they're not recordings in the sense that I do my piece, save it, and send it to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a recording in the sense that my camera shows me, Dave's camera shows him, Steve's camera shows him,
and
StreamYard mixes them all together immediately in real-time and then throws them out to whatever...
Right.
Thing you put it
so
on.
Depending on whether you want to do a live stream or you want to do a download podcast.
Right.
A download stream. No, that doesn't make sense.
Right. The problem is our language, not the technology.
Yep.
So if it's an immediate live event, you have, and everybody's in one room, you have way more options. If it's not a live event or it's not... people in the same room, your options are more limited, but there are still plenty of options.
So if you just want to, one of the big things now is how-to videos. So you're gonna hook up a stereo. You go to the YouTube app, hit go live, and then just start hooking up stereo.
Yeah, right.
And that can be your live stream, and then download later to watch it later.
I think I'm going to go to Canada, to the back country, and hang out with the moose.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
Now, a lot of those have trail cams on them, so they can...
Yeah.
What's like the Kodak, Falcons in Kodak Tower?
Peregrine Falcons.
Yeah, the Peregrine cam.
Yeah, right, the Falcon cam. I don't know if that's still...
The very first live stream was a coffee pot.
No, they did...
I used to watch that coffee pot.
Yep.
It was in Cambridge, England, and I still used to watch it because it was so... cool to have video coming from England.
And and so they put a camera on the coffee pot to tell if there was coffee or they had to make it themselves.
Right.
So as long as there's just a tiny little line of brown, you don't have to make any more.
Well, okay, so what I think I'll do is I'll go back and I'll watch some more of these YouTube, and I'm going to go back and watch this show and listen to it several times and try to extract out some things and make this thing as easy as I can, because I call because it, quite frankly, got so blurry.
Yeah, it does. The thing to do, Larry, what I would suggest is you go and look at various podcasts that are close to what you want to do.
Okay.
Then you either, most people will tell you on their websites how they do what they do.
Okay.
Or you can write to them and ask them how they do what they do.
Right.
And that will give you a much clearer idea of what would work for the situation you're looking at.
Uh-huh.
You can probably go to YouTube and search for how to create a podcast.
There's that.
Yeah.
I've done that a dozen times now. But it's easier to talk to someone like this show, and that's why I support it. Because, I can look at YouTube forever, but I can't ask a question.
Right, 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 mm-hmm. right.
True.
And that's what's nice about the live streams.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as usual, you guys come through, and that's why I'm a member.
Thank you, Larry. That's what we like to hear.
I go to you guys. You guys have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Larry. You too. Stay warm. Except for when you need to duck your head in the snow.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the moose.
With the mooses. Moosies? Meese? Moose? Moose eye?
Moose? I don't know.
We had some of our...
Okay.
Mooses come through the shop?
Mooses, yeah. Some of our graphic customers would put their towers on the floor during the winter to keep their feet warm. And then move it up on the back on the desk during the summer because now their feet are too warm.
Yeah, right. All right, I'm going to read some news before we head for the break. Microsoft isn't the only one caught in the siren song of AI. Google's ongoing Android updates, driven by AI integration and innovation, are disrupting the phone app's core functionality, causing glitches like call drops and lagging interfaces. People still make calls on their phones? When did that happen? Users, especially on Pixel devices, are reporting widespread frustration from these unreliable changes. This pattern highlights Google's prioritization of experimentation over stability, prompting calls for better quality control. Does that sound familiar? Google's December Android update is mostly for background stuff. This might sound like there's no rush to install it, but you should, since it provides security and stability updates. Millions of Google Play users might soon start receiving payouts from a $700 million settlement over alleged anti-competitive practices. According to New York State Attorney General Letitia James, God bless her, payments could arrive as soon as this spring. The United States District Court for the District of Columbia will hold a hearing on April 30th, 2026, to consider whether to approve the settlement. If approved, the majority of the settlement funds will be used to pay consumers who made purchases on the Google Play Store between August of 2016 and September of 2023. Google is also ordered to make changes to stop its anti-competitive practices. We'll keep you up to date. In a Monday press release, Samsung announced plans to bring Google Photos to its Samsung AI TV lineup, transforming televisions into oversized digital frames that showcase your most meaningful memories. Chromecasts already let you do this, but it's not powered by AI, so there's that. Samsung is framing this partnership less as a utility and more as an emotional upgrade to the TV experience, whatever that means. For many of us, Google Chrome's reading mode is the only way to consume web content. It lets you focus on the meat without any of the distractions, but on Android, it's a little bit hit and miss. Luckily, Google is making some updates to reading mode, making it more seamless and enjoyable experience. It's rolling out to devices slowly, so don't get excited if you don't see it immediately. Not to harp on the dangers of AI, but people are being put at risk of harm by false and misleading health information on Google's artificial intelligence summaries. Google has said its AI overviews are helpful and reliable, but some of the summaries, which appear at the top of search results, serve up inaccurate health information and put people at risk of harm. Of course, it's not only Google's AI that does this, but Google seems to be the place most people search. For example, Google wrongly advised people with pancreatic cancer to avoid high-fat foods. Experts said this was the exact opposite of what should be recommended and may increase the risk of patients dying from the disease. Please consult a physician, not AI, when you have an issue. However, of course, you can consult us about your issues, but only about computer issues. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Again, it's not just that AI sometimes gives a wrong answer. It's that AI sometimes gives exactly the opposite answer.
Confidently.
Confidently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you should definitely. My favorite is I gave it a prompt. I was asking it, okay, how would I do this code in Python? It came back and gave me an answer. I said, I tried that. It does nothing. It came back and said, you're absolutely right. Try this instead. And it gave me exactly the same code.
What was the one classic example where somebody asked how to keep the toppings from falling off the pizza? And it said Elmer's glue?
Yes. Yeah.
which answers the question.
It does answer the question.
Yeah.
It is technically correct. Which? Yeah.
The best kind of correct. Well, yeah, but you know, who uses the phone anymore? So Australia has banned a social media for anyone under 16. So first, you have to prove your age to get on social media, but there's no private way to do that. And so the Australian government posted some tips on how to wean your kids from social media. One of them was schedule a time to call your friends on the phone.
Yeah, that works.
Well, none of my friends are in my country. They're all over the world.
Well, exactly. I speak to more people on WhatsApp than I do on my phone these days. A lot of them are in foreign countries, and WhatsApp is the way they communicate, either because of repressive governments or because it's free.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, I get that. I spend a lot of time on WhatsApp. I just discovered there's a WhatsApp client for Linux. I just never bothered to look before. And so that's going to make life a little easier for me.
Yeah, for me, it's the different nets that run different nights. And we got this one group that literally, I've got my one friend, Bob, down in Australia, and talk to him just about every other day or so. But there's another group that gets into the Pi, Raspberry Pi group. And excuse me, and they're from all over the world, and because the original Raspberry Pi creators were from England, and one of the creators is in this forum from time to time, Kenneth, and he's there, and he's part of that group, and he jumps in there, and like I say, we're all over the map. We've got one gentleman that's down in Cuba that comes on quite a bit, and.
It's always interesting to talk to the person that actually wrote the thing you're using.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, like I talked a while ago that when the Raspberry Pi 5 was going to come out, and he says, you know, because people were poking at him, you know, what about this, what about that? And he kept saying, you know, wait, you'll see, and you're going to be amazed. And sure enough, you know, the 5 is the way to go. And
I told you many, 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 many years ago, I was using Buttonware. PC Writer, and I sent him it was shareware, so I sent him some money. He wrote back to me and said, you're the first person who's done this. If you have a question, here's my phone number. What?
Hello?
Jim Knopf himself, Jim Button of Buttonware, sent me his phone number.
Sweet.
So at one point I called him up and I said, you may not remember me. He did, which was very sweet, and we chatted about a feature, and he added the feature. These days, that's not going to happen very much.
No.
But when you can actually talk to the person who wrote it, whether it's rarely live, but you can email them and they will email you back, that's some serious stuff right there.
Yeah. Well, like I told you, that software that I was waiting for over 3 years to come out, Mike, who is the creator of, took over the software and revamped it, came on, will respond back to you. And matter of fact, one time I had him call me because I had signed up for my subscriptions and I had used two different emails. So he personally called me and says, Dave, which email address do you want to use? And I told, give him the different, he goes, well, then you want to use this one. I said, okay, well, thanks for calling. You know, I mean, hello.
Often when it's a small project like that and you're a person who is valuable to them, you can have that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
It was often fun at the trade shows where someone would be selling off software and the guy that wrote it was usually standing there. And you point out a bug or ask for a feature and the next morning it's there. Went back to the hotel and wrote it in.
I did that
back when so many programs were just one person.
I did that for the word processor. What was it?
WordPerfect.
WordPerfect. I wrote them and said, do you have a driver for this printer, brand new printer that just came out? 2 days later, they wrote back and said, we're sorry it took so long to answer you 2 days. We had to go out and buy the printer and write the code. Try this.
Yep.
And it worked. Okay. All right, listen, that music tells us the first hour of this show, the first hour of the first show of the new year is in the books, but there's a whole other hour of the longest running new computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's Soundbites. We're going to have a whole other hour of Dave Enright, a whole other hour of Steve Ray, a whole other hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole other hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585 585- 866-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Take a quick bio break, but join us as we have a whole nother hour of sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong in the second hour of the first show of 2026. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Have you got a pen there over there? Yeah. All right. Sorry, everybody. Just checking my name off the list. We got some folks who are kind enough to talk about why they support Jazz 90.1, and it's lovely to hear. It's lovely to see all the people who support us and care. These are the comments from our last pledge drive, and they mean a lot to us. So thank you all very, very much. We did pretty good in our last.
Steve, can I have the pen?
Yeah. We did pretty well in our last pledge drive, and that's all thanks to you folks. We head into the new year able to keep the show and the whole station, in fact, on the air. So
Bridgeport, West Virginia.
Yeah.
El Cajon, California.
We appreciate, I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it.
Cajone?
No.
It's Spanish. Cajon. K-A-J-O-N?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. While Steve brushes up on his Spanish, we will go back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Happy New Year, guys.
And the same to you.
And I am a member, and you don't have to donate only on those days. You could donate today.
Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Bill.
Okay. I am a super distro hopper. I'm up to 587 right now. And I decided to try Kubuntu because you guys mentioned it. Unfortunately, under the new KDE 6, you can't use PlankDock or CairoDock, but I found out that you can use CrystalDock.
Right.
If you search for CrystalDock, you'll find it from the KDE store, and it's very interesting dock with animation, and it's on a glass 3D table-like. But in Kubuntu, I like to use Pythos, which is a Pandora client. In Linux Mint, it works perfectly. But in Kubuntu, if you download it from the Flathub, you get the sign-in screen, but you can't sign in on it. If you download it from Ubuntu, you get the sign-in screen, but it says it wants a password manager, so you download Seahorse. It opens the password manager, and then you are allowed to put in your email address and your password, and it works until you restart your computer. And you'll find out that it has saved your email address, but you have to retype in your password into the Pandora and the Pythos.
Right.
I have tried everything in Seahorse, the GNU, the SSH. I've made every key there is, and none of those passwords seem to last. And I was wondering if you knew, and this has been a problem for probably 8 or 9 years for me as being a distro hopper, if you knew, what is it you have to do? Is it a permission that it's missing, or is it something else?
And so this is just Seahorse, right?
Well, no. Seahorse is the password manager of choice
right.
in the Ubuntu systems. And with Pythos, like I say, in Mint, you put in your password, your email, and Pythos works perfectly. In many distributions, and Kubuntu being one of them, you can't get it from the Flathub. You can get it from Ubuntu.
Right.
It won't work until you download Seahorse. And then it works. You don't have to touch Seahorse. But then when you reboot your machine, the only thing it remembers is your email. It does not remember your password. You've got to type your password in again. And I've gone into every setting in Seahorse and added a Pandora account password. I found that on my Linux Mint when I went into Seahorse that was called Pandora account.
Right.
So I called it Pandora account, and I had password in everything I could find, and none of them would stick. And I'm wondering maybe it's a permission problem.
Okay, yes. So,
I wonder if you knew.
Yeah, so what's happening is this. Seahorse is really just a front end for GNOME Keyring.
Right.
Right, and that manages the passwords for all your applications. The problem is GNOME Keyring sometimes has a problem when you do auto unlock. Excuse me. When, for example, you don't have a password to log in, where you do an auto login.
Yep.
Sometimes the GNOME Keyring doesn't unlock. You'll discover that when you, for example, you open up your laptop and you're automatically in without putting in a password, and then you try to open, for example, Chrome browser. It will ask you, it will say, I need the keyring, I need your password, because the GNOME keyring didn't open. And then it will open the keyring, and then anything you do after that until you close the session will work. I don't know a fix for that yet. But
we've identified the problem.
We have identified the problem. So if you, for example, had if you had to put in your password at login, or your thumbprint or whatever, however, you know, whatever. But if you have a password for login, then the key ring will unlock and Seahorse should work, and so should all the other stuff you want to do. But if you auto log in, that is to say, you don't have to put in a password to log in. You know, you just open it up and you get to the desktop. Then sometimes the key ring does not properly unlock. And until you do that, you get the symptom you see.
That makes perfect sense. But I want to understand, then why does Linux Mint just work?
Linux Mint does things differently. that's all I can say. They are... In many ways, look, the KDE
more user
desktop,
friendly than
they are. Well, they are. It seems they are more polished than many other Linux versions.
Because they use the Seahorse keyring.
Yep, everybody does.
Manager, but when I open it up, it's already loaded. It shows me Pandora account. It shows me my password.
Yep, yep. Now I have not looked into this. It may be that they have set that password to blank, which would then let it work. That's dangerous. That's not a good thing to do. I haven't looked.
Yeah, I tried that. That didn't work.
Okay. But, I mean, that may be working on Mint. But
is there a different password manager that might work?
No. Underneath, they all use the GNOME keyring.
Okay. Well, you explained something that, you know, it's for years has puzzled me.
Yep. Now, you know, if whatever way you open the key ring before you load your program,
yeah.
before you load Crystal Dock or whatever.
Well, Crystal Dock works.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but I just happened to look at that. I'd written it down. For before any, you know, any program, like I said, generally speaking, if you start Chrome and the key ring is not unlocked, it will ask you for your password and it will unlock it for you. Some other programs won't do that.
Yeah. You know, I like the KV desktop. I know you like XFCE because the KV is so customizable. I put my panel at the top.
Yep.
And I put the crystal dock at the bottom.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I have my panel at the top, too, on XFCE. But, yeah, I like KDE. I do like the KDE desktop. KDE stands for K desktop environment. I don't think the K stands for anything but the letter K. Or maybe it's a Men in Black. I don't know. But it is a lovely and very customizable thing. I personally didn't like it because back in the day, and this isn't necessarily true now, but back in the day it was horribly slow, terribly bloated, and ran poorly on low-end machines. So I never really got into it. But these days they rewrote the whole thing. It is much faster. It is much better. It is way prettier than almost anything else.
Right.
Maybe elementary is prettier, maybe. But, yeah, it's real lovely. But yeah, it does have a few quirks.
That's a nice word.
I want to thank you for explaining that to me because I've been pulling my hair out in my age. I don't have much hair left.
Start pulling the hair out on your chin. It's probably there's more of it there. I know that's true of me.
I'm a year older than you. Have a wonderful New Year, guys.
You too, Bill. Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye. Oh, did I mention this on the air, or did I talk about it before we got on the air? I was looking at Linux Mint, and Linux Mint has a bunch of themes you can add.
All of them do. Was off air.
Yeah, all of them do. And I discovered there's one called Chicago 95, which makes your Linux Mint system look exactly like Windows 95.
That'd be cool.
I will be downloading that this afternoon.
That is cool.
Just to play with it, just because I can.
One of the projects I want to try that I saw happen which I've got an extra spare machine that I'm going to try this on, is I'm going to load Windows, it doesn't matter, 10 or 11. And then there's this software that you can put on top of that. It's called Atlas OS.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it.
And what it'll do is literally go in there and strip out all the Windows junk.
Yep.
And bloatware and all this other.
There used to be an old program called PC the Crapifier that did that.
Right. The problem you'll find is that at least some of that stuff will come back with the next update.
Well,
it just will.
You just have
to be aware.
No, I'm turning updates off so I can.
Well, yeah, and that's dangerous too.
Yeah, but it's not going out on the internet.
You have to explain that to the people who are listening. Otherwise, they're all going to say, "Dave Enright said I should turn off updates."
No.
No, you really shouldn't.
No. I'm doing this as an experiment on a standalone machine. It doesn't go out to the World Wide Web. Matter of fact, I already downloaded the ISO, and put it on a flash drive so that I got that ready. And this is, matter of fact, it was a unit my sister gave me. And it's an all-in-one touchscreen. The sucker, it's got to be a 34-inch screen.
Nice.
With the keyboard. Yeah, so I'm setting that all up. I'm doing a fresh install. And just going to play around with that, because if it goes south on me or acts up, oh, well.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained. But I want to just try it for an experiment and play around like I used to in the old days when we had the shop going and played around with all the new systems coming out.
Speaking of new hardware, as you know.
Another laptop?
I have a problem.
Another laptop?
No. What I realized is that many companies are selling off pallet loads of old machines because they don't run Windows 11. So they're going to start showing up on eBay and all those other sites for cheap. And I mean cheap.
Well, I just...
So I have to remember to not look.
Well, I'm guilty. This, between Christmas and New Year's...
Uh-huh.
I was looking, and I had... Because I wanted a bigger monitor. And I found this 34-inch. It's used. It was taken out of the box, because the company calls it an open box.
Right, right, right.
So they knocked $100 off.
Yeah.
And it's a ViewSonic.
Nice monitors.
Good brand.
For $200.
Okay. Do they have more? I'll buy one.
I only saw this one, so I grabbed it, and I got that coming. And I figured, I don't care if it's unboxed or not boxed. As long as it works.
As long as all the pieces are there and it works.
Because this one software I use... I've got a lot of different panels on it, and I've got two 24-inch screens now, but I figured this 34, now I can get them all up and down on one and have one up above just because it takes up more space.
You're building NORAD.
Well, basically, well, this new software that I was talking about previously literally has the main program for the control of the radio. And then it's got a logging program. And then it's also got another add-on program that does CW or RIDI. And you can have those panels open, and they all talk to each other. So I need to have them both. But it is a pain in the butt having them overlap, because then you got to click on this one to hide it and push it back. Bigger screen.
That's one reason I use multiple desktops. It's, I've set up my alt keys, so alt 1, alt 2, alt 3, moves mm-hmm. me to multiple desktops. I have 6 of them set up on my machine. I've got email on one. I've got my terminal on another. I've got my web browser on another. So I've got multiple mm-hmm. screens set up. And when I go to them, I'm only looking at that one thing, so there's no distractions.
And I forgot that I also have my Chrome open.
Sure.
With a few tabs.
You? Tabs? When did that happen?
And, I'm bouncing around in the tabs, too, depending on what I'm doing. So, yeah, this, I figured, all right, for $200, 34-inch monitor?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Obviously.
Go for it. I can live with somebody opening it and didn't like it and then returned it. Oh, well, I'll save $100.
Exactly right. No, I get that. I absolutely get that. But I am looking. I have to admit, I am tempted to start looking at eBay, because I got my NUC from eBay.
Okay.
My little the little mini computer that runs my Plex server, I got from eBay, and it was the cost of a Raspberry Pi, $120. It had an i5 and a terabyte hard drive in it. Come on.
Well, those Geek
Com, come on.
What we were talking about before, those like Geekcom and all those other little boxes are becoming very popular. Granted, folks, if you're a gamer, you probably don't want it.
Right.
Because you can't put in a high-end graphics card. But you can load these up with both memory and SSD hard drives.
And a lot of times they're the glue between two different things.
Right.
Yeah.
Like three cameras that have to record three separate streams.
Right.
Well, and feed it all into a single.
Well, app. A lot of them, too, have that AI chip in it for AI recognition. And, they're screaming little machines for what the average person, unless you're a gamer, then you don't want to consider
it. Right, right.
But otherwise, home use.
Right. If you're a gamer or you're a photographer or an audio person, no, clearly not.
Right.
But for everybody else on the planet.
Surfing the web and doing word processing and everything else.
Right.
Yeah, you don't
have
to have this big box. It's what, maybe 4x4?
And it's becoming so common to have those little tiny computers that just stick on the back of the monitor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or just go to the next step and get an all-in-one.
Yep.
One box that has the computer inside the monitor.
Well, yep. I saw one guy did a 3D printing where he two of the screws, because he had it like mounted up on a bracket, these two monitors. So he created a little bracket that you took out two of the screws on the four holes that mount, you know, the onto the mounting bracket for the keep the monitors up.
The Visa monitor.
Yeah. And you take those two screws out and you screw his little thing in, and it held one of those like Geekcoms.
Yep.
And I've also seen them for Raspberry Pis, and they just hang off the back, out of the way. Wireless keyboards, you're golden.
I got really tired, really, really tired of looking over here for my time and over there for the temperature, and I couldn't find a couple of other things I wanted. So I wrote some Python code, bought a 5-inch screen for my Raspberry Pi 3.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole subgenre of weather station displays.
Right. Well, I wrote my own.
Yep.
And it now sits up there, and I just wrote, I 3D printed two little brackets so I could hang it on the wire rack. And now I just have to look up, and everything I want is right there. I can see it easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in front of me. It took like 5 minutes to print those two brackets.
Yeah.
Done. It's a done deal. It's very nice. And again, for the, particularly for the home user who maybe wants to set up a backup server in their home, or they want to set up a media streaming service like Plex. One of those little boxes, and then you're going to want to add a big hard drive if you're saving movies to it.
Yeah.
But one of those little boxes is more than adequate for that, and they're cheap. Like I said, right now, you can. I bought my NUC for $120. That's the price of a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much more powerful, has way more storage.
Will run any OS that you want.
And runs any OS I want. And how could I say no to it? How could I say no? And like I said, I was absolutely convinced it wasn't going to have a hard drive in it. I was convinced, even though it said I had a terabyte hard drive, there wasn't going to be one. But there was. It was an NVMe drive.
HDMI?
No, it has an HDMI out. It has an NVMe drive, the little chewing gum stick drive, and it's beautiful, and it just sits in the corner and hums along all day long.
USB 3.
There's two USB 3s, two USB 2s, and I've got a 2 terabyte SSD hooked up to one of the USB 3s. So I've got 3 terabytes of storage on that thing. Should be enough to last me for a while.
A couple of months.
The only thing it didn't have was Wi-Fi. So I bought a $10 Wi-Fi dongle.
Oopie fa doopie.
Exactly. $10 Wi-Fi dongle, and I'm done.
Yeah.
Okay. So it actually cost me $130 because the 2 terabyte drive I took out of an old machine that wasn't working. So, yeah, I mean, come on. You can get these things, and are they used? Yes. But most of these things were sitting in a rack somewhere, in an office somewhere, just humming along, doing some background task, like Steve said. And that's about as gently used as you can get.
Yeah.
When I took this thing out of the box, it looked brand new. It wasn't dented or scratched or anything. It looked brand new.
But wears and tears... Computers is literally, folks, the turning them on and turning them off.
Right.
That is harsher on, that's like, best scenario is a light bulb.
Thermal shock.
Yeah, the old, all of a sudden you turn on a light bulb and you'd see it go super bright and they go pop and it's out. It's because of that on and off surges that shock it
right.
to but get it going or turn it off. And wear and tear on it. Otherwise, we've said for years,
if you turn it on and leave it on, we leave
our computers on and just turn off the monitors.
Yep. If you turn it on and leave it on, it'll run for years.
Yeah. I had my server on for over 11 years.
Yep. Yep. Because you never turned it off.
No, that's it.
Did you take a picture of the uptime reading before you shut it down that last time?
No, I should have.
When I was at RIT, one of the guys who worked for me, Gabe, was really angry at one point because back in the 32-bit days, the uptime counter rolled over.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it was at one day, and he was so angry. I said, I'm sorry, you should have taken a screenshot. Well, I didn't know it was going to roll over. Well, you should have. It's 32 bits.
Yeah.
Do the math.
How many days in 32 bits?
It's your job. Do the math. So, yeah, it was, I don't remember 400 some. I don't remember how many. I honestly don't remember how many days it was. It was a lot. But, yeah, it was,
According to Gemini. signed or unsigned. A 32-bit unsigned integer is about 49,000 days.
No, it was signed.
So
clearly signed.
So it's only 31 bits.
Yeah. but at any rate, the thing is that right now you're going to be finding some serious hardware bargains. And again, these are not going to run Windows 11. They may not be great for Windows 10. But if you're looking for a second machine to run Linux or to put to set in a corner and
to
make
learn
it,
Linux.
Right. To set in a corner and make it part of your backup strategy or whatever you're going to be doing. I have one that's running my internal AI setup. Yes, I'm running. It's your fault, too, that I'm running an AI. It's his fault. Mm-hmm. That I'm running an AI server in my home to play with. And it doesn't have. It's not terribly fast, and I don't need it to be terribly fast. I'm playing with it, but you know those kind of things are out there, and we're going to start seeing some pretty serious hardware bargains coming up. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And we will see you in just a few.
America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Steve?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. So I have two questions for you. The first one's actually important, I think. I have a program that I like very much that was written for Windows XP, and I'm still using it all these years later. But because it was written for Windows XP, the graphics on modern computers are extremely small. I asked ChatGPT to update or, you know, fix the program so I could see it. It asked for the source code, which I don't have. I gave it the exec file. It wrote something. Other than backing everything up to the 347 places I can back things up to, what damage can trying this program do to my Windows machine?
It depends on what it rewrote and where it rewrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it changed a DLL, I would immediately delete it. Because DLLs are used by multiple programs, and if ChatGPT made a change to one, it may have multiple consequences. If it made a change to only one program, what is that program written in? Is it an EXE file?
Yes.
And it rewrote it for you?
Well, yes.
Again, it depends on what DLLs it uses.
How would I know that? How would I know what the DLLs?
And how
you,
would it?
You don't. You the don't. Author of the program does.
And how does it decompile an EXE?
Yeah.
I mean, an EXE is a compiled program that you can't get at.
There are decompilers, but
there are decompilers. Maybe it did. Look, here's what I would suggest.
I wouldn't trust it.
I would try it on a machine that I don't care about.
Yeah,
or in a VM that you can erase.
Or in a virtual machine, right?
Okay. Well, I've got a VM set up.
That'd be the
try it there and see what happens. The other thing, of course, is every Windows machine comes with a magnifier. You could use that when you're using that program.
There's also Windows 11 compatibility modes where you can.
It doesn't run unless I'm in compatibility mode.
Okay.
So it's already there.
The other thing you could try is Linux Mint and Wine.
Yep. Okay.
But beyond that, look, if you want to give it a try, God bless you, but you're a pioneer.
Yes.
Well, basically, it's only going to make, and I say it says it's only going to make the graphics larger.
Okay. Good for it.
One of the settings inside compatibility mode is to change the display back.
Right, but he says it doesn't work under, it doesn't actually run under compatibility.
Yeah, I'd do it in a virtual window. I would not run that, you know, bore out on a running system because, like Nick said, all it takes is, you know, if it messed up any of the DLLs that, you know, are tied to the registry and might lock it up and brick the machine.
Okay, well, you know, I do need a new anchor.
There you go.
Second question, and this will be a quick one. How do you determine the gender of a computer? I want to name my computer, but I don't know whether to call it Hal or Megan.
Oh, there is no thing I can say here that wouldn't get me in trouble with somebody. Pam. Yeah. Call it Pam.
Yeah,
Pat.
Use a
Pat.
Yeah, use a gender and neutral name.
Pam.
But generally machines are she's.
Right. Machines are females, like ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Right. Or you name it after a cartoon character.
Oh. But I can't do Mickey or Minnie because that's obviously gendered.
What were all the servers at your office? They were all Star Wars characters.
Okay, so at one point we had Mickey, Minnie, and Pluto.
Yeah.
Pluto, well, Pluto's a male dog. We had Star Wars characters, but we also had for a long time the moons of Saturn.
Ah.
Nice.
Okay.
So there are, and again... Those are all named after the children of Saturn, the god, the Roman god. So they're still going to be male and female, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that? The moons, most of the moons of Jupiter were named after mistresses of Jupiter.
Yeah.
And NASA sent the, what was the probe that went to Jupiter?
Hera.
Hera.
Yeah.
Which was Jupiter's wife.
Yep.
So NASA sent Jupiter's wife to check out all of his mistresses.
Right. So, you know, you could name it Titan or Enceladus or Iapetus or Tethys or, you know, any of those names. Those are all the moons of Saturn. And there's not all of them. There's 200 and some out of them. But those are some of the moons of Saturn. And so you could name it things like that, assuming you can spell Iapetus or Enceladus or Epimetheus. Epimetheus.
How to spell these.
Yep.
I knew a guy whose password, many, many years ago, whose passwords were the names of the Aztec deities.
Ooh. Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl and all of those. And those. So those were... Those were hard to guess.
Yeah,
hard to remember how to spell too.
Well, that was his field.
Yeah. I read a science fiction story where the Aztecs beat the Spanish conquistadors and became the current modern day superpower in spaceships, and all their spaceships were named after the Aztec gods. And
nice. Anyway, yeah. So that's they're either all female. Or you name them after things that nobody would know what the sex was anyway.
Okay, I appreciate your input, gentlemen, and I will be in my sandbox.
All right, have fun with that. Let us know if that works.
All right,
I'd be really interested in hearing whether that works.
Okay, I will talk to you in a couple weeks then.
Good luck.
Yeah, you will, yep.
Thank you.
Well, we'll talk to you tomorrow night, actually. Aren't we doing tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. We're doing tomorrow night.
You get to decide.
I get to decide. I decide yes.
Sound about your name?
I decide yes. Every Sunday night from 9 to 10 p.m., we have the Soundbites Lounge, and you are welcome to turn off your mic.
Hold on.
Dave, turn off your mic. when you're on the phone. We are welcome to join us. You'll find a link on our website at soundbites.org. It's the Soundbites Lounge. And we would be delighted to have you join us with or without camera, with or without microphone, as we do that. And Larry, you're welcome to join us. I should have mentioned this when Larry called in the first hour.
He's still listening.
We do that there. We don't record it.
I keep threatening to record it and post it, but nah.
You can. That would be fine. We don't hide anything. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Josh from sunny California, or wet California. I don't know which that is. Which is it, Josh?
Hey, fellas. It's wet today. A little gray, little rainy.
Well, I'm still rather be there.
Yeah, the temperature, I guarantee, is a major difference.
It's about like, low mid-50s, a little rainy, but we'll take it.
All right. Thanks for calling, Josh. Yeah. Bye.
Take your weather and go home.
It's, I think, 15 below here or something. No, it's not that bad.
No, it's only 25.
It's cold. What's up, Josh?
I just had a quick question. I set up a Raspberry Pi 3 like a month ago. Mm-hmm. And because I'm trying to make like a calendar for my wife. So I had the idea to get one of those flat screen cheap monitors, hook it up to that. But I was wondering if you had any ideas of a good calendar app that could work, pretty nicely online and offline.
Oh, so you're really looking for a calendar program that you would show in a browser window, which you could then look at also, like on your phone or whatever.
Yeah, so like you could kind of access it from your phone, but then say like you walk into the kitchen, you could see it kind of on the wall in real time, like, oh, I have a dentist appointment today.
Okay, so there's like 50 of those. Probably the easiest one is Google Calendar.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What OS are you running on the Pi?
I'm trying to remember.
Well, for a browser-based calendar, you don't need any.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's probably Raspberry Pi, one of the Raspberry Pi OSs, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can run a browser window. You can also run it in kiosk mode, which means you don't see the title and the, it looks like it's full screen, right?
Okay.
And what you do is you set it. Okay, so what you do is you set it so that that's the page you're looking at. And then on any other machine or your phone or wherever, you can update it and it will update the page and you will then see the current, it might take a minute, but you'll see the current stuff available right on that screen. And on Google Calendar, you can set it so that different types of appointments you can set with different colors. You can decide, see 7 days, 5 days, 4 days in a row. So you can see, you can see whatever you want to see. It does mean that once a week, if you use that program, once a week you'd have to go to the screen and move to the next week.
Okay.
But that's, particularly if you've got a touch screen, you hit the forward button and off, and you're off. You're done.
I found a website called Pi Up My Life.
It was another one I was going to suggest. Sure.
And they have tutorials on how to build calendars like this.
Awesome. Pi Up My Life. Perfect.
And Steve will put a link on our website for that as well.
Pi My Life Up.
Pi My Life Up.
There probably is the other one, too. But
yeah, probably. But yeah, there's do a little web searching. You'll find an amazing number of people who are putting out short projects, like things you can do with a Raspberry Pi over the weekend, type projects, and this would be among them. So you can fairly easily see quick ways, and much of this is copy and paste. Much of this is just follow the directions. So even if you're not a Python programmer or you're not super savvy on this stuff, you can get this thing done pretty easily. And a Pi 3 is more than adequate to do what you're asking it to do.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, I could tell just by kind of the basic interfacing I had with it, setting it up and everything, that it would be, quite powerful.
Yep.
Or anything like that. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much. I always love listening to your show. I miss driving around Rochester and the east side and all that, and the west side to visit my parents. All that. I miss the snow sometimes. I'm happy that you guys are on the radio. I love listening to you every weekend.
Fellow friends. And your job is to make sure everybody in California starts listening.
I've been telling everybody.
That's what I like to hear. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, you got it. Take care, fellas.
You too, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, these things like Pie My Life Up, there are a lot of sites like that. There are a lot of places.
Find one called Everything But Stromboli.
Nice! and
there are lots. Do they make a Stromboli pie?
Yeah,
probably. Apparently not, because it's everything but Stromboli.
But you can find lots of sites that have short, easy tutorials on short, easy projects that you can do with a Raspberry Pi. And the problem with them is deciding which ones to do in what order. Because you look at one, you think, oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait, that'll be fun. Oh, no, wait a minute, that'll be fun.
You got to make a laundry list.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like those old Heath kits you used to buy.
Oh, please. Mm. I can't tell you how many hours I spent in Radio Shack buying Heath kits.
I miss
how
that
many
store.
Hours. Oh,
I always wanted
that in Goldcrest.
I always wanted the robot they had, the Hero Junior.
Oh yeah,
but it was too expensive for me. And then I started looking for them online, and now they're really expensive.
Now they're really expensive. But yeah, so you can pick up. You know, if you're at all interested in being or becoming a tinkerer of any sort, you can grab a Raspberry Pi. Pretty inexpensively, or again, like I said, one of these remaindered systems, these obsoleted systems, and start playing around.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about a Raspberry Pi is that you get the pins, the pinouts, so that if you wanted to add a breadboard or you wanted to just add, you know, a light or something. Those are there. The things are there.
Oh, yeah. There are so many projects out there. Matter of fact, there is a gentleman that's got I forget his name, though. But he's a ham operator, but has put out books about different projects to do with the Raspberry Pi.
Mostly centered around radio.
No. All kinds of stuff.
Nice.
I mean, yeah, he gets into, you know, you got to have some soldering skills and some of the
for
stuff.
For some of those things. Now, yeah. What we're talking about with Josh, you just plug the monitor, the screen, into the Raspberry Pi. That doesn't take a lot of skill.
No.
And all the rest of it is just
code.
Coding, programming. And again, most of that is cut and paste.
Yeah.
Or I found this program, you install it like this, and it runs.
Yeah, and that's
simple
the other
enough.
Great thing about YouTube. You can sit there and watch it the first time, and oh yeah, okay, this is what I want to try. Now you restart it, and you can stop and pause as you're working along with that project. That I found helpful for a lot of folks in trying to either set up or do something. Is, you know, to have a YouTube video that they can follow along with and stop and pause as they go along and do it. It just makes life a lot easier.
Oh, look at this. I already had gone to Pie My Life Up to look at how to use DOSBox to play games on a Raspberry Pi. Yeah, there's just one of the beautiful things about a Raspberry Pi is that it is so ready for the home tinkerer.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're talking, and again, I'm not a hardware guy. I own a soldering iron. I think it's got about an inch of dust on it. I don't use it. But you don't need to own a soldering iron. You don't need to be able to do any of that stuff.
I love those stock photos that a lot of companies use for a soldering iron that shows someone holding it like a pencil.
Yes, yes.
By the tip.
Yes. Also, that site, for those of you who are new to Linux, Pie My Life Up also has a section on Linux with Linux commands, Linux tutorials, stuff like that. So that's a nice place to go to as well for those things.
Do it yourself weekend adventure, installing Docker on the Raspberry Pi.
Well, yeah, you can do that too.
That's the
and
main
again,
head,
once
main,
it's done.
Yeah, main headline today.
Well, and then here's a Home Assistant. How to set up a Home Assistant on a Raspberry Pi.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How to install pip on Windows. Really? I remember pip from my... yep. Oh, this is different pip.
No, this is a different pip.
It's not pip from CPM.
No, it's an entirely different project.
Pip from Python.
Yep.
I tried to install a program the other day, and it kept saying I needed a snake.
Yeah. there's... The thing you have to remember about computers in general is they can do so much that it, again, we talk about analysis paralysis. What is the thing you want to do right now? Because you can say, oh, I love this, I love this, I want to do that, I want to play with this, this looks great, what a cool thing. So make a list and go through it.
Yeah.
Don't even order it. Just make a list. Print it out, throw a dart. Today I'm going to do this one.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
It's your free time. Use it the way you want.
You won't know until you look into it and see if it's something you might further your interest.
That's right. And places like Pi My Life Up, there's a company that every Friday, and I don't know the name of it off the top of my head, but every week they put out a list of weekend Raspberry Pi projects.
Mm.
Things you can do in a weekend with a Raspberry Pi. And again, some of them are hardware. Some of them require a breadboard or soldering or whatever you're going to do. But a lot of them are just, you know what will be cool? This thing. Like you said, there's a whole bunch that are weather stations. Now, I wrote my own because I wanted to, because I wanted to play. But that's part of it for me is the playing.
Mm-hmm.
But you might want to say, I just want one.
Yeah.
So this looks good. I'll put this one up.
There's Rochester Makerspace.
Rochester Makerspace is a great place if you're interested in playing.
Open house Thursdays at 6 p.m. and Saturdays at 11 a.m. So they may still be there now. They're on...
I'm sure we're being played on a giant screen in their Makerspace.
Yep.
Hi, everybody. Somebody over there is going, how did they see us?
Yeah.
How'd they know?
Bill, nice, yeah.
Hey, Bill, how are you? Yeah, so there's a lot of that. And again, you know, with a lot of these places, you might look at it and say, that's over my head. Okay, some of them will be for people who are system administrators. But a lot of them will be for beginners or intermediate people. And again, don't be intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
Start with, you're a beginner. Pick a project for a beginner. You learn things. You go on and on and on, and eventually you go to intermediate. And
you
got
to learn to crawl before you can run.
We got talking about that at the airplane club. We do, during the winter, we do simulation. Real flight is programmed for flight training, but it has a mode where everyone on their own computer gets together and you fly together.
Nice.
And so we've got teachers, and you know. So this week we're going to learn how to do a pop top and a Harrier, and so this why do more people don't come? Some people are a little intimidated by. So then this past Monday, they I got an email Tuesday morning. I got to my email Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
Saying, all right, so tonight we're going to do basic beginner stuff. Come on in. We're just going to fly around, have a good time. Okay, I missed that one.
You missed that one. And that's the one you wanted.
That's the one I would have wanted, yeah.
That's the one I wanted. I get it.
I joke that I'm not very good, but I'm enthusiastic.
And that counts for a lot.
Yep.
I have thought about doing Linux tutorials somewhere. I don't need another thing to do.
It's too bad you don't work for a company that has a training video thing.
Well, I could do it online, but this is why. Yes, and Mastermind Lounge does do live stuff, and I've got classes up there, but they're not. I haven't been advertising because I just am so busy right now.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been pushing them, but I do on Linux. I do on Mastermind Lounge have a section where I talk about where I offer classes on Linux, mostly for beginners. And you know, what's nice about something like that is I can say, all right, let me show you my screen. This is how you do this. The other part of the problem, of course, is what operating system are you running?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I suppose I could say, okay, we're going to do this is Linux Mint, or this is the command line. That'll scare everybody away. This is how you do things on the command line. But there's a lot to Linux, and I get that. But you don't have to eat it all at once. You know, how do you eat a whale one bite at a time? How do you learn Linux one bite at a time? Learn a little something today, a little something tomorrow. It's, to go to the car analogy. When you first got in the car, nobody said, okay, there's the racetrack, let's go. They said, okay, this one's the brake. Remember that.
Yeah.
That, so, you know, you can take it in bite-sized chunks and learn the bite-sized chunks as you go. All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. That was it. That was the very last, very first show of 2026. And we want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each and every one of you. Again, like I said, we did finish the year okay. So thanks to each and every one of you who has been kind and generous enough to contribute. We will be on the air at least for another few months, and that's great. I want to thank all of you. Listen, I want you to have a good week. I want you to go out there and play. I want you to enjoy yourself with your computer this week. Don't just work, play. And we will see you in just 166 hours.